Good afternoon and welcome to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Leanne Donner, sitting in this hour for Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Jason Croft. One out of every 99 Americans is in prison. That's almost 2,400,000 Americans. Illinois prisons are holding almost 47,000 people. Among them, 68% do not have high school diplomas. My guest today is Cherry Brewer, Deputy Director of Programs for the Illinois Department of Corrections. And today we'll talk about education programs in our prisons. Good afternoon, Cherry Brewer, and welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Good afternoon. And there's a correction on my title.
Oh.
I am not the Deputy Director of Programs. My title is Administrator for the Office of Adult Education and Vocational Services.
Ah, thank you. Thank you for setting us straight on that. The number to call if you'd like to take part in this conversation is 217-333-9455, or you can call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Ms. Brewer, I understand that your background is in education. Tell me how you became interested in pursuing a career in corrections.
Well, I started out as an elementary teacher in 1979, I believe, and I taught for 11 years at the Decatur in the Decatur Public School System in Decatur, Illinois, and I did that for 11 years, and I was looking to expand. And I heard about the opportunities at the Department of Corrections, and including education. They offered, of course, when I was in elementary, I taught children, and this was just a little bit different. I was looking for something different, and I became involved with teaching adult basic education, also known as ABE programs, at the Lincoln Correctional Center in Lincoln, Illinois, when it was a male facility, and taught there probably for about 11 years. And then I transferred to the Decatur Correctional Center, where they house female offenders, and I taught them for several years. And I also taught in one of the youth centers served as a principal part time at one of the youth centers at IYC Kewaunee for the juvenile offenders. And I served for a little bit as the assistant warden of programs at the Decatur facility, still overseeing substance abuse and education programs as well. And I had this opportunity to become the administrator for the IDOC Adult Ed and Book Program. So I have a little bit, you know, about 18 years in corrections and still going and still interested in education.
Now, you mentioned the Adult Basic Education Program.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a preparatory program for those who then go on to get their GED, or is it a prerequisite?
Well, the Adult Basic Ed is basically for those who – we use the TABE test, which is a test of Adult Basic Ed, which is most adult education centers uses that for an assessment. And if the offenders score below a 6.0 on that test upon intake, then they are mandated to go to school for 90 days. And that would be the Adult Basic Ed program. It's sort of a literacy program, and it's composed mostly of reading and math, but they do include other subjects and content areas.
And how?
Yes, kind of like a prerequisite. So once you meet that 6.0, then you can go on to a pre-GED or to a GED program.
And how many people come in to an Illinois state prison for the first time who is at this level of needing the serious basic education, who, you know, either is illiterate or not literate enough to be ready to take a GED course?
In fiscal year, the past fiscal year, FY09, we had approximately 19,000 offenders that took the test at intake, and 7,223 of those were below the 6.0 level, which is approximately 38%.
And what kind of participation do you have in the programs? Is it a given that if you go to prison, you're going to take these basic education courses? Is it a privilege to take these courses? Are there waiting lists?
Okay. If you score below the 6.0, then you are mandated to attend school. So that's a given. There's no options, unless you have some medical or other kind of reason that would that you could opt out. But for the most part, if you're mandated, you will be going to school. And, of course, we do have waiting lists in all of our programs because the number of instructors that we have are outnumbered by the number of vendors that we have to serve. So the ABE program is either voluntary or mandate. You know, there are criteria to establish who goes and who doesn't, or who has to go and who doesn't have to go.
But you can also volunteer for that program. The ABE is either voluntary or mandatory, and if you want to pursue your GED or pursue a pre-GED program, then that is strictly voluntary.
And do you have to have scored a certain...
Just over the 6.0.
Over the 6.0.
Yeah, over the 6.0 in order to get into pre-GED programs. And we prefer to have the offenders, it depends on the prison, at various places we have waiting lists, and sometimes the waiting lists are greater. So if there's no waiting list, you can get into that GED prep program with an 8.0. But basically, in order to take the GED test, we require the offenders to have a 10.0. To score at least a 10th grade on the TABE test before administering the GED test to them.
And are there prisoners who choose not to go that route, or is it something? I mean, one would think that you're in that situation, you have time on your hands, and you'd want to do everything you could to make it productive time and help you prepare for when your time is up and ready to enter society again.
Mm-hmm. We do, like I said, we do have waiting lists. Our GED waiting list for this past fiscal year that ended was 856. So we did have a number of offenders that were waiting to get into that program. Our ABE waiting list was 2,600. So there was a greater need to get those in to the ABE program than it was for the GED. But GED, we keep those classes full. I'll just put it that way. They're full because we want to make sure that the offenders have the best opportunity for success upon release.
Sure. And where do you get your teachers? How do they come to you?
Our teachers are all certified. They're certified by ISBE, Illinois State Board of Education, and they have to maintain their teacher certification requirements just as any public school teacher.
I would think it has to take a special person to be interested into coming into the prison to teach a certain commitment to the mission and to helping people that not everyone is interested in helping.
That is correct. I would say that the majority of our people do not come straight from college or right out of school into our programs. These are usually people who have taught in the public school system and have actually actively sought out the correctional system.
Do you also have English as a second language?
We do on a limited basis, but we don't. It just varies, and we have some offenders that are basically in the adult basic ed class that receive some services, but we don't have a program designated just for ESL students.
And am I right that you have some college or associate degree programs that are available?
We contract with 13 community colleges to provide vocational services statewide. And most of the colleges are colleges that have these prisons in their districts. So we contract with the community colleges to provide vocational and academic programs to the offenders that are eligible.
Do you see a difference in the prisoners as they gain an education?
Oh, absolutely. Not just behavior-wise, but, you know, I mean, if they're busy and they're occupied and things like that, of course, they're not causing, you know, a disturbance or trouble or whatever. So they are, you know, the more programming that you do have in your facilities, I think the better, you know, the better behaved, I'll say, that the offenders are. And most of them will tell you that they never had that opportunity when they were on the streets or whatever to have a small class and have the one-on-one and the attention that they get, you know, in our facilities and with our instructors and educators and the programs.
My guest today is Cherry Brewer of the Illinois Department of Corrections, and we're talking about education programs in Illinois prisons. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. The prisoners in these programs, to the extent that they have a choice in how they spend their time, do they tend to choose the company of other people in their programs?
Well, of course, that varies. At some facilities, they are grouped as by programs and, you know, programmatically, and so I think that just makes a better, you know, a student when they have like similar interests.
And does the education, you know, raise the level of discourse in the prison population?
I would hope so. I would hope so. That would be one of our goals as well, you know, and to help them, you know, mainly we want to help them, prepare them to transition back into society so that there's a transformation, not just, you know, in their behavior, but also that they have gained some knowledge and skills while they were incarcerated.
I think we sort of have our own ideas about what conversations are like in prison, and, mm-hmm. you know, they're probably not, are these the dishes to which you were referring?
That's correct.
Something like that might get someone, I don't know, in trouble with their fellow dishwashers.
That's correct.
What kind of follow-up do you do with people after they're released? I mean, I know you have, like, there are parole officers and requirements, but do you do follow-up to see how they're doing economically, if they, you know, if they're getting jobs that they find that will, you know, pay their living and or might that they might even find meaningful?
Well, IDOC is in the process of trying to track with work with IDES, Illinois Department of Employment Security, to track these offenders to see if they're getting or are gaining employment opportunities and how long that they remain employed or whatever. But I don't have any information on that. I don't have any data or results yet, but I do know we're working on. That's something that we are definitely working on. And as far as I lost my thought.
That's okay.
As far as what we do refer them while they're inside we have life skill centers, and there are life skill centers in the Chicago area and the central area and part of the southern part of the state, that if you're returning to one of the communities where there's a life skill center, then they can help you with job referral and employment skills and things like that. So we have a referral process while they are in while they're still there, and hopefully that they take that opportunity and pick up, you know, where they left off on the outside. We also have a job prep program that we started in 2007 with one of the community partners, Safer Foundation, and it prepares the offenders for workforce development skills as related to employment. And the job prep classroom is sort of like has a dual purpose. It teaches them some introductory computer skills, and it teaches resume writing and building self-esteem and interviewing techniques and job search. So we do have the life skill centers and the job prep program that try to help develop the offenders before they're released. And then once they do get released, and there are these centers in the community provided by this job prep program that also help to refer them for employment and try to help them maintain their employment skills.
We have a caller on line one from Champaign. You have a question or a comment about education programs here in Illinois?
I had two questions. One is, what is the average length of stay at an Illinois prison, and what is the recidivism rate? And I'll hang up and listen to your answers.
Okay. According to the director, our new director, Michael Randall, in one of the statements that he released recently, that 47% of the offenders who are released from IDOC have only been in custody for 6 months or less. And they're very short timers, and that doesn't allow us to do a lot of programming with these short-time offenders. So that kind of like adds a little bit to the problem that we do have, is that in some cases we don't have them long enough. And the current recidivism rate, to answer the second part of your question, according to Director Randall as well, is 51.3%. And we're working to improve that. And that is down from 54.4% in 2003.
And am I right that the reduction in recidivism, there we go.
That's a tough word to say. I know. With it all the time.
I can say it, you know, a million times off the air, but when I get on the air, that's another issue.
I know. But
the reduction is what, about 22% for those who have done college in prison programs?
Well, the information varies, but I do know that it is significant. It is a significant difference in those offenders that have participated in educational programming while they were incarcerated. And it makes even more of a, you know, the research shows, and there's plenty of studies out there, the research shows that if they're involved in post-secondary programs, that number is greater, you know, decreases, you know, greatly.
I was looking at this report that was, I guess, commissioned by, and it looks like you were a part of it. Maybe you can tell me a little more about it. Chicago Metropolis 2020.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But it refers to, basically it supports what we all know in our hearts. It's
right.
True that
uh-huh.
that people in prison will have more success when they get out of prison if they had an opportunity to become educated while they were there. Are there other benefits to us as a society, and for that matter to their families, besides economic benefits when they return to society?
Well, outside of the obvious, the job opportunities and the better employment opportunities and higher paying wages, sure, that it affects the family structure, and they're able to support and provide for their families, gives them their children role models, and it sort of like breaks that cycle of, you know, that revolving door cycle as well. And so, you know, it's said more and more all the time that these people are coming back, you know, to your neighborhoods, and they're going to be working and living and shopping next door to you. So it's just to everybody's advantage if they come out better than they went in, so to speak.
And it looks like there's evidence that it makes economic sense for the state as well, because the reduction in recidivism
right.
also
mm-hmm.
Means a reduction in the cost of corrections.
Right. That is correct. If we can keep them out safely on the streets or whatever, then, of course, that's income that we don't have to spend or revenue that we don't have to spend for that bed space that they're going to be taking up inside one of the facilities.
An interesting figure that I see now, and I mean, it's probably true in just about every community in our country,
mm-hmm.
but the money that we spend on education in our schools is so drastically lower than what it costs to incarcerate someone, that it would be an argument for spending more money on education. But we see it, but it tends not to make such an impact that people, change their funding structures.
I know. For some reason, that mentality is, you know, they would rather see
pay more later.
Right. I'm going to say it's either, you know, you've heard it before, you pay now or pay later. So we end up paying a lot more later, and that's just one of the, you know, ways of society that they would rather see the, you know, the offenders behind bars, and at no matter what cost, it seems.
It's an interesting mindset.
Oh, yeah.
So what I have here regarding Chicago's public schools, that they spend about $10,000 per pupil,
mm-hmm.
whereas it cost about $21,000 to house an adult prisoner in the state.
That's correct.
It's more than double.
21 to 24,000, yes. Mm-hmm. And it varies per institution and their security levels.
We're talking today with Cherry Brewer from the Illinois Department of Corrections. I'm Leanne Donner, sitting in today for Celeste Quinn. You can join our conversation on education in our prison system by calling 217-333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. And we welcome your calls and comments today. It's really startling when you see how many people are in prison today, and it seems like so many more are in for drug crimes, whereas violent crime rates have gone down. The incarceration rate for drug crimes in Illinois has gone up considerably over the course of the last, I don't know, 10, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Does that have an effect? I don't know, it's sort of a difference in violent criminals compared to people in for drug crimes. Does it change the dynamics of who needs educational programs in the Illinois prison system?
Well, I'm not really an expert in that area, but I would say that it would have to have some impact, as well, because those that are usually, the typical substance abuser, whatever, probably has lesser, less of an education or whatever, and is more in need of, educational and vocational training, because oftentimes they resort to, substance abuse, because because of the other things that they're lacking, as far as being able to find employment or make a living for their families.
I know that the department is in the news quite a bit right now because of proposed layoffs due to budget cuts. Have those cuts also affected the education programs?
Not yet. I have had to lay off probably four contractual vocational positions, and only because we were downsizing and phasing out a program. So hopefully those people can find employment still within their respective colleges. But I've only had to downsize at this point for four programs that we were considering phasing out initially this fiscal year.
Is there any particular success story that you could tell us? I know you won't tell us the name, but are there any particular circumstances that stand out? This is somebody who really came out and changed their lives because they had this opportunity.
Well, absolutely. There are people. I run into people all the time that have been incarcerated and are gainfully employed. When I was at the women's facility in Decatur, there was one particular individual that had struggled and finally earned her GED and took some vocational classes, and she is successfully running her own business, a legitimate business in Chicago. And, we hear back from offenders all of the time that either, call or send letters thanking the department, for the educational opportunities. And we also have some reentry summits at the facilities where the offenders are exposed to the resources in their communities. And the best thing we can do is have – one of the best things that we do is we have ex-offenders come back and they see how successful some of their ex roommate cellies and how well they're doing now. So there are plenty of success stories out there. Yeah.
So that must really inspire them to be good students.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, the offenders see that, you know, if she can do it or if he can do it, I can do it. So that's one of the greatest tools that we have is to be able to allow some of those to come back into our facilities and to show that they can be successful and use the tools that we provided them with while they were incarcerated.
So what is a classroom like at the, say, GED level in a prison in Illinois?
The minimum is, there's no minimum. I mean, because, like I said, we have a waiting list. But the maximum capacity for most of them is between 15 and 25 students. Most of them are around 15 because of the size of the classroom. So we keep it small enough so that they can have that one-on-one with the instructor. And we do have open entry, open exit programs so that if you, of course, offenders are released, and we have new offenders that come in all the time, so they can come in to these programs when there's space available. And they're hard workers. I mean, they are there for a reason, and they are there. They're very determined to get their GED. For some of them, this is the first time in that they've stuck with something. And then the graduations that we do have at our various facilities are just sights to see. I mean, it's just like your regular graduation in the community, and the offenders are very proud of their achievements, and so are we.
So tell me what that graduation looks like. Do their family and friends come?
At some facilities, they are allowed to, and at others, for safety reasons, they are not. But some of them have the cap and gown, and they turn their tassels to the left or to the right and whatever. We have commencement speakers from the presidents of most of the colleges, the community colleges, come out, and they are given the same treatment that they would do at a regular community college graduation. And that's just it's just something really exciting to see, because you can sense their pride at the graduation.
There are probably a lot of tears at those graduations.
At the women's facilities, for sure. The guys are sort of like reserved, but the women are very emotional and thankful and appreciative, and their families are proud of them. So, yeah, it's something that they've you know, wanted, but the opportunity never presented itself. And it's just unfortunate that they had to commit a crime in order to see that, you know, that they could be successful.
We have a caller on the line, on line one, from Pasotum. Hi, you have a question or a comment?
I have a question, I guess, or sounds like it's a very good thing that you do. Education is important. I was wondering if there's an outreach from the people who have succeeded to get their education to try to reach the youth before they get in trouble. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'll listen off air. Thank you.
Okay. I know that probably most of those kind of mentoring programs occur in the Chicago area. And I'm not really familiar with that, but I have heard that they do exist, and I think that would be an excellent deterrent for someone who's been there, done that. And I do know that they probably do that more in the Chicago area than they do around the state, but I'm not that familiar with it. But that is an excellent idea.
Thank you. And we would be happy to take your call at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. We're talking about the education programs offered by the Illinois Department of Corrections and the great impact that it has really on all of us in all of our communities, although I think that it's something that we don't think that much about. The first time I ever really had prison education brought to my attention, I was in a professional organization, the National Federation of Press Women. It was in the mid-1980s, and a woman who was from one of the western states wanted the organization to get very involved in literacy programs because her husband had been murdered, and within the same year, her son had been murdered.
Wow.
And she discovered that both of the perpetrators could not read.
Mm-hmm.
So she became a volunteer in her local prison, teaching basic literacy. And I think sometimes if you don't have reason to realize how important literacy is and basic education, it's easy not to think about what an impact it has on those of us who never have any contact with people in prison. But
you're absolutely right.
It really does.
Right. And unfortunately, sometimes it's that low skilled or non-reader or low literacy level person out there that finds that's the only thing that they have is to resort to criminal activity. And if, like you say, if we could do something at the front end, we wouldn't have to spend so much, you know, on the back end in order to keep, you know, our communities and families safe.
Is there a vast difference in what the program, in the programs that are offered between one state prison and another? Does it vary by the security level of the prison?
That is a good question, and yeah, it does. But for the most part, we do offer some of the same programs at our facilities, and some of the similar ones are like auto mechanics and computer tech, as far as the VOC programs, in addition to the GED and ABE programs, auto mechanics and computer tech and construction occupations, food service and horticulture are just a few of them. So they're not exactly cookie cutter, but some programs offer a little bit, some facilities offer a little bit more than others, and this allows the offenders to, if they complete a certificate or one or two certificates in certain vocational areas and they still have some time left on their sentence, then we give them, we allow them an educational transfer so that they could possibly go to another facility and pursue a vocational certificate in another field. Just to make sure that we're giving them as many employment skills and whatever, you know, and tools that they can have when they do get released, so that they can find some gainful employment. So,
the auto mechanics and the food service are pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
What is the focus of the horticulture program? Does it prepare people to be
landscape? They can work in nurseries or landscape, landscaping or private businesses or things like that, or start their own business. And besides that, they also provide a service to the facilities as well. And keeping the grounds and mowing the lawns and keeping the grounds and the flowers and things like that up. We also are partnered with Illinois IDOT and IVR Natural Resources, and we use the offenders to their expertise at growing and propagating plants, and they are using the wildflower program throughout the state, and a lot of the flowers that you see at the state fairs, the two state fairs in Illinois, and our rest areas are plants that were grown by the offenders. It gives them a sense of pride and a purpose and whatever, and also a skill that they could possibly benefit from upon release. So that's just one of the ways that we try to help them, instill in them that they should be able to give back and at the same time, you know, learn a skill. And with our construction occupations program, we also partnered with Lutheran Social Services with Habitat for Humanity, and they do at several at our sites, they provide the walls for the habitat houses.
Well, that must be very rewarding to them.
You'd have to see it. I mean, they're such that sense of pride and of something positive and the accomplishment, and they're doing something, you know, they're giving back, you know, and trying to make up. You know, there are those out there that really, you know, are remorseful and want to give back and try to make up for, you know, some of the things that they've done in the past. So that is a good feeling. To go out and talk to those guys when they know that they've done something good for somebody else.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Leanne Donner, sitting in for Celeste Quinn. My guest today is Cherry Brewer of the Illinois Department of Corrections, and we're talking about education in the Illinois prisons. You can join the conversation by calling 217-333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. How does it work in the budget process? I know that it's so hard right now with the state budget and the situation that it's in. Who decides how much of the correctional budget goes toward education?
That decision is based on the Office of Management and Budget, and historically, it has increased. I'll just put it that way. But for the most part, for the last couple of years, we've kind of like had to live within our means and not expand as much. But the decision on how much is spent on the programs comes from the governor's office management budget.
We have a caller on the line from Champaign. You have a comment or question?
Yes. Yeah, I have come in a little bit late in the conversation, but I've been hearing you speak a lot about the importance of learning the trades for those who are released. And I was wondering if you knew anything about or had any could make some comments about, for those who may not be released very soon, what their attitude or experience is with education programs, and sort of related to that, about courses that are offered that are less about, you know, learning a trade, but classes in the liberal arts, for instance, or in poetry and so on. Is that does that have how much is that offered, and does that also have the effects that you were speaking of? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, as far as the first part of your question for the long-term offender, they also have opportunities to improve their, you know, literacy and education levels. They may not be able to be enrolled in some of the VOC programs, but they certainly have opportunities to enroll in correspondence courses, which they would, of course, pay for themselves. And it's often paid for by their families, and other kinds of distance learning programs are available to them, and they simply just, you know, seek out permission from the administration at the facility to participate. And as long as it is, you know, nothing that's going to be contradictory or considered contraband or anything like that, then for the most part, these programs are available to that long-term offender who has quite some time to do. I do know that with the TAM situation has been in the news about offering at the Supermax programs for those long-term offenders, and the director has directed us to begin to provide GED programs, a GDE program, and GED testing at TAMS as well. So we're making some progress in that area as well. And as far as if that long-term offender also has the opportunity to participate in other classes like substance abuse and anger management and other things of that nature, whereas, you know, and that's just in the last couple of years or so, we're beginning to branch out a little bit more and realizing that those people also have some needs that have been possibly overlooked or whatever. So more is being offered in that area. And as far as the academic programs, the community colleges that we do contract with on their own do provide a two-year degree program that is not funded by the taxpayer. Well, it's not funded by DOC. It is strictly, the cost is strictly picked up by the college, and of course they get some reimbursement from the state for offering those academic offerings. But we do have 2-year degree programs that are available through our vocational junior colleges. And last year, we had 289 of those that, offenders that did earn an associate's degree.
We have a caller online. We don't have a caller online for. So about what percentage, and forgive me if you don't have this in front of you, but if you do know, what percentage of the corrections budget goes towards education programs?
I do not have that information available.
I'm sure that, like everything that provides a service to citizens, it's never enough.
Right. I was going to say that.
Never enough.
And you said it for me. We could always use more funding, absolutely. But we understand, you know, we would like to expand our program offerings as well, but it's kind of difficult in these economic times to talk about adding costs to an already struggling state budget. But we do actively seek out grants and community partners to help us in our goals to provide quality education, educational programming, and job skills for our offenders. And we do have some interest in the green initiatives and any green opportunity that sounds like it's a good fit for us, we do actively pursue.
Are there particular, getting back to the liberal arts classes that the caller talked about earlier, are there particular liberal arts classes that are more popular than others, or do they have a choice?
It's just strictly in associates and applied sciences, AA degree. I would say that's more... It's more of a general study.
So it's more the basic English course and not the poetry course.
Right, right, yes. More so.
So how many people, you said it's often limited to 15. What's the largest size class that you
have? The maximum is 26. It's 25 or 26 in the GED program. And in most of our other programs, especially the ABE, the administrative directors say no more than 15. We keep the classes small.
Because they need more individual attention.
And because it's easier to manage, and there's always that security, you know, aspect as well.
So how does it work in a prisoner's daily schedule? They have... they get up in the morning. Are they going to class, or are they doing something else and going to class in the afternoon?
Our teachers work, you know, 8 to 4 or 7 to 3 or whatever. So the offenders would normally go through their morning routine, you know, get up, wash up, whatever, go to breakfast. And everybody has an assignment in the facility to either assign to you either have a job assignment or a work assignment, or you have a school assignment. So unless you are, you know, for medically unassigned or whatever, so they do have assignments, and you either go to school all day, or depending on what particular program you are involved in, and I would say that we also have eating programs as well. So after they have, you know, their evening meal, whatever, then they come back for another 3 hours, some of them, to participate in educational program in the evening.
Do they have homework?
It depends on the instructor. It depends. Yeah, it's pretty much like a typical school.
And they go to the library?
And we do have, for those facilities that do have library staff, they are allowed to go to the library. You know, and computer access or internet access is something that we don't allow them to do. So that sort of like limits some of the things that they can do as far as researching and being current on materials. But, you know, we do have a pretty good success rate for the GED, passing rate, 84% of the students that take the GED test are pass. So
that's
they're getting...
impressive.
Yes. So they're getting the information that they need to be successful. It may not be using the latest technology, but they're getting what they need.
We need to wrap it up pretty soon. Is there anything we haven't covered that you would like our listeners to know?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, it's nice to know that there are people out there, because, like I said, the community partners and the community colleges that are interested in helping us to retrain, retool, transform, you know, lives or whatever, and putting these guys back out on the street. And we have a director, our new director, Michael Randall, is very supportive of education and vocational programs, and is seeking alternate delivery methods so that we can reach more of these offenders and getting them off of the waiting list and preparing them to reenter into society. So it's nice to know that not everybody just thinks that we should just lock them up and throw away the key. These people are coming back out, and, you know, we need to do everything we can as a society to make sure that they're prepared to live amongst us.
Well, thank you so much. That's all the time we have today on Afternoon Magazine. Thank you so much, Cherry Brewer from the Illinois Department of Corrections, for joining us. And thank you for listening. I'm Leanne Donner, sitting in for Celeste Quinn. Our technical director today is Jason Croft.